Covered in Glory is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, must be 21 years or older. To another edition of Covered in Glory, where we are on the other side of the Thanksgiving break and heading headlong into the business end of the Premier League season. But before we look forward, let's look back for just a second. Brent, my friend, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. It was nice to just like have a little bit of a break, enjoy some football games, although pretty much all the games were terrible. Well, three out of the four were football wise. But then soccer is back on the weekend. Soccer's back again this weekend. We did okay, right? We were up a little bit, I think, on our 5-point last week. But we missed our study abroad pick. And I always feel like that just like ruins the entire thing when we miss our study abroad pick.
It ruins it more when you go over like I did on Trendy on Monday. I'll take up a little bit and miss the Italian game versus the alternative. I'll tell you that every day of the week. So Brett, before we start getting into this week's Premier League action and make up for not being killers that we were last week, I think we're going to have a better week this week. We want to talk about the hottest topic right now in international soccer, which is sin bins. So you are a very busy man. You have to work on your pronunciations like 23 out of the 24 hours in a day to try to get them right on the show and then still somehow butcher them. But hopefully you've been following this a little bit. It looks like the International Rules Group wants to start moving orange cards or sin bins forward into more high profile competitions. And so I think this is coming for all of us, Brett. And for those of you who don't know, the concept comes from a rule that was put in rugby about 20 years ago, which basically put something in between a yellow card and a red card. For very specific infractions, the referee would then have the discretion to, instead of sending somebody off or just giving them a warning, dispel them to the sidelines for a 10-minute period of time, 5-minute period of time, 15-minute period of time. It hasn't been decided yet. It'll likely be 10 minutes. So, Brett, when you hear this, you know, some pundits are going insane about this, saying it's going to ruin the game. Other ones are saying, hallelujah, it's about time. Where on that spectrum do you fall?
Well, I mean, honestly, the spectrum that I fall on is this is like a perfect glimpse of how my brain works. Is I could sit here and tell you like Sean Longstaff's touches in the penalty area for this year, but I completely had to be filled in on you about what was happening with the orange cards. I think for me, I think that there's a lot of really punitive punishments in soccer. Red cards, at least from a sporting perspective, like they completely change the sport in a lot of ways. I mean, there's a huge statistical advantage to going down with a red card. And I mean, the penalty thing, you and I have talked about this on the show, with penalties, you hit somebody's hand in the upper right corner of the box, and then you're giving the other team an 80% chance of a goal. So you have these like punishments that don't fit crimes. And so I think allowing something like an orange card, where we can stop having these like extreme like changes to the whole dynamic of a low scoring sport is a good idea. I'm not a traditionalist in the sense of like, oh, it's going to ruin it, and there's only yellow and reds. Now that's all we can have. Like, bring me some things that make it less insane when you get some of these penalties that completely turn around matches.
Yeah, we did a whole discussion on rule changes last year. We talked about real time and extra time. We talked about like potentially having kick-ins and some other things. I think it was around the time MLB was changing their rules. But this one did not come up. But the more I read about it, the more I like it, Brett. Like, a lot of the arguments against it comes around giving refs more things to screw up. But I think what people forget about VAR and all the controversy comes around this is like, yes, we complain a lot about VAR, but if VAR did not exist, we would be complaining twice as much. Like the obvious offside goal that allows for something to stand versus what we are experiencing right now. Like, people in England are still screaming about the hand of God, right? Like, 40 years later or whatever it is. So I think we would be far more upset if it didn't exist, even if we are giving the referees another weapon to kind of butcher here. But I think the way in which they're doing it's really smart. So yes, it probably is not going to take away from what you're describing, like the hits a hand in the upper box and suddenly becomes 0.8 XG. It's not going to take away from like the triple penalty that comes with a red card in the box where the guy gets sent off, given a penalty kick and gets suspended for anywhere from 1 to 3 matches. It's not going to do that. But what it's specifically going to be targeted at is dissent. And so the idea of modern soccer right now, of watching, you know, 20 grown men just bum rush like the one guy in stripes and scream and yell and have all these histrionics and all that sort of thing in order to try to influence a decision. Like, why are we trying to preserve that? What is so precious about that that we want to keep it? Why is that a good thing to watch a mob rule try to influence the game for a bunch of guys screaming at a ref? And I'm not a ref apologist. I'm not a ref defendant. Like, none of those things. They're wildly underpaid. They need to be better. They need to be better resourced and better trained. But, like, watching just 20 guys scream at them isn't entertaining. It isn't increasing things for the spectator. So giving a deterrent mechanism, this idea that we're going to send you off for 10 minutes if you do that, if you're not the captain and you go scream at the ref, I say bring it to the NBA. I say bring it to the NFL, bring it to baseball, bring it everywhere. Let's protect these guys a little bit and return a little sanity to the matches.
Yeah, I'm with you on that completely. I mean, because, you know, obviously, I think, wasn't it just like last night, or I could be mixing my days, but LeBron was sent off for 2 technicals, you know, on a flop and then something else where he was sent out of the game. And then it's like, you know, from the fan perspective, you're paying X amount of dollars to go watch LeBron play. And like, that's how he goes out that game. So that stuff is ridiculous. And I guess I've never understood, you know, the need for these huge, like you said, though, where they just flock the one guy in the field and everybody's yelling and having their 2 cents and telling him to F off or whatever it is. I mean, I like the idea of something that punishes that, but also doesn't like completely remove a player because he tells a ref to F off. Right. Like that's where like that is, I think, a thing that it allows you to clean up. Just kind of an ugly, unsightly thing that goes on in soccer matches that nobody is asking for. Like, nobody's like, hey, man, I can't wait to go watch this Chelsea match and watch Thiago Silva scream at a referee for 10 minutes.
Bad example. Come on.
He's not Thiago. Sorry. That was a really thing. Yeah, for some reason, he was a name that popped in my head. I might have just seen Chelsea on my note sheet here and then thought Silva. But it's more one of those things where it's like you don't want to see the guy completely gone for the match, but there does need to be some recourse. Or if the guy is a total, you know, butt, I guess, because I don't want to do extra work here, like a Bruno Fernandes type who constantly is complaining about everything, where you're just like, yeah, go cool off on the sideline. Now your team's down to 10. You know what I mean? I kind of like that idea.
And I think that a guy like you is going to end up loving the idea. You haven't fully processed it or thought it through because the tactical kind of element that it's going to introduce when there's a temporary man advantage instead of a permanent man advantage is going to be fascinating. So you have a 10-minute window when you're a man up, but any change that you make becomes permanent. Do you bring on another attacker just for those 10 minutes? Do you bring on another defender if you're the team that's trying to preserve?
We'll keep her up, baby. We'll keep her up.
it's going to bring such a different element to the game. And like, I am not, you know, an overly traditionalist. You certainly aren't. The idea that we can introduce tactical dynamics that are interesting and modern and kind of bespoke and new to this sport that we love so much, I'm all for.
Yeah, I am just for anything that makes the product a little bit better without completely sapping the integrity of the game, or at least like the spirit that it was created under, right? And so in this sense, it's like you're removing a very unwanted element out of the game. It wastes time. It's just unsightly. I'm not getting anything as a fan. I don't think anybody is getting anything as a fan. So things like that just make the matches more compelling, that make them more interesting, that get to the nuts and bolts of why you love a sport, I'm always going to back that over that.
I've never heard a single hockey fan say they should get rid of power plays. Like, I've just never heard that argument ever. Like, it's the most exciting part of the match. So why wouldn't we want to have a little bit of that in our game?
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's so much better than, you know, somebody getting a second yellow because he yells at a referee. And then the game is completely, like, if that happens in the 40th minute, you know, Casemiro makes a tough tackle, draws a yellow, gets into it with the ref, gets another one. In the 40th minute, that game is completely changed. If he's gone for 5 minutes on either side of halftime, that's a really fun, interesting thing that you're talking about for that game. So yeah. I think that's a great idea.
All right, orange cards, two thumbs up from the Covered in Glory crew. I know they are waiting for us to weigh in on it so they can finally move this into the World Cup. We give it our blessing. We'll all come back after this. We'll give Caesars a little bit of love and tell you which bets we are giving our blessing this week.
You know, when the conversation turns stampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. Omaha Full. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
All right, we are back, and we are starting with one of my favorite possible matchups in the entire world. We are starting with Manchester City, second at 29 points, versus Tottenham, fifth at 26 points, Sunday at 11:30 a.m. I am smiling and I am giddy before I even read you the odds. I've got City at minus 320. Caesars has Spurs at plus 800. The draw is plus 450. City minus a goal and a half. That is an adjusted spread against Tottenham right now. It's minus 125, and the Spurs are minus 105 to at least keep this close. So, Brent, do the Spurs have any survival instinct at all? And I mean any. All the evidence suggests no. I went nuts about the high line and inappropriate scenarios last week. And what do? They play an insanely high line on a free kick in what's likely the final action of a half where they gain no benefit from doing so and of course concede a backbreaking goal versus Villa that eventually led to Villa winning and me cashing a lot of bets. And this was made even funnier, Brent, even funnier by the fact that a high line is partially valuable because it can cause the opponent to wander offsides, and the Spurs had approximately 10 million goals waved off for offsides on the other end. And Son did his best impression of me in my 20s at 4 a.m. in the bar because apparently he can no longer see straight. In this ultimate test for our boy Postiglou against the City juggernaut on the road, is he going to go unbound, unbent, unbroken again like the Sand Sticks, or is he going to be a little bit more cautious and not suffer the same fate?
No, as someone... I say so many things that are so incriminating on here. On someone who watched multiple Celtic Champions League games last year, he does not back down. It's part of why I love it. I think it's great for the league. I think it's great for the sport. I love managers that are just like, I don't care. We're just going to play this way. Now, it's great for us as bettors too, Toby, because I just don't see this. there is not a world where our guy Ange takes his foot off the gas. I just don't see it. Celtic played Real Madrid in the Champions League last year. A huge disparity in team quality, right? Team that's won multiple Champions League titles over the last few years versus a Celtic team that wasn't even winning the Scottish Premiership. And they were like pressing up and trying to get him, and Madrid would put 5 goals past him. I mean, now he's got like better players at Spurs. Do you think he's going to take his foot off the gas at City? No way. Like, it's just not
happening. I cannot wait for the orange cards to come to the Premier League and like 9 guys on Spurs rush a ref. They all get orange card. He plays a high line that's just Sun. Like, that's coming.
Well, I mean, at that point, you might want to be trying to catch teams offside. But I get the general gist of where you're going with that one. But yeah, I don't think there's any backing down. And because of that, I mean, I was shocked. Even like at the adjust, I knew it was going to be adjusted. I knew it was going to be minus 1.5 line. And I was like, it's going to still be like minus 150, like maybe even up to minus 170, minus 125, man. Like, what is happening?
Dude. I couldn't agree more that he's not going to back down, which is why give me every single City bet you could conceive of. Every single one. I will bet the wheel here. Just anything that has City in a positive light, I will take the lot. I'm taking them obviously on the adjusted. They don't have the minus 2.5 posted. I'd take that. The minus 3.5, give me some. Like, give me every one that you could possibly give here. Because you could talk me into any of it. They are properly motivated, the City team, being down a point to Arsenal on the table, and they are going to unleash hell on this Pyrrhic Spurs club that seems determined to cover themselves in flames instead of glory.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you there. Obviously, I'm taking the minus 1.5 because at least for the general spread. But I mean, I'm going with the Haaland 2-goal line. Like, I plus
2.
But oh, okay, all right. So +275 for Haaland to score twice or more, which it might be more. I mean, just because of the fact that like this City team too seems like built exceptionally well now with Haaland to go up against like team like Pep has kind of transitioned his style to be a little bit less on the front foot, and he plays those like 4 center backs now with Vardiol and Walker basically. Well, at least like old age Walker. Where they're basically like it's 4 center backs. It's like a more skilled Stoke City back line. Like Tony Pulis with skilled players is what's going on at City. So they absorb pressure a little bit more. So then that means that they're absorbing a little bit more pressure. Spurs are playing this high line. And then you have this dude named Erling Haaland who's just going to be running into acres of space. I mean, I don't really particularly like the plus 275. But I for 2 goals, not just 1-2 goals, but this just seems like way too good to pass up. Like he's going to have about 8 shots, I think, when they play.
Yeah, I mean, like if Watkins and Jackson can do this to him, the last 2 strikers they played, like what the hell is Erling Haaland going to do to them? I almost went to the hat trick. I was even looking for a 4 line at one point to see how high a line I can get on that. And just looking at Haaland, like, he passed 50 goals last week in only 48 appearances. So, Brett, what do we have to see, in your opinion, before we can officially start saying we are watching the greatest goal scorer in Premier League history?
The only question at this point is longevity. How long does he stay in the league and does he stay healthy? Other than that, I don't think there's a question, right? Like, he is undoubtedly prolific. The only thing is like, is he going to get hurt or is he going to get bored and go to Madrid or some other super club? That's it. That's the only thing stopping him. But this run that he's had over this stretch since he's entered the league until now has been insane.
Yeah, I was looking at a list of the Premier League goal scorers who scored at least 100 goals in the Premier League. And how many of them even averaged a 1-2, like a 1-2 appearances? Like Haaland's over 1-1 right now. How many do you think even have a 1-2 on that list?
Oh, God. I couldn't even guess. Not many.
Not many at all. It's Van Persie, Salah.
That sounds right.
Michael Owen. And then Aguero had a very impressive record, 184 and 275. And then Henri, 175 and 258. And then our boy Harry Kane and Alan Shearer, who's at the top of the list with 260 goals, but that took 441 appearances. So, like, what we're watching, this 1-1 is just absolutely preposterous. Henri is currently the leader right now in terms of ratio with people who got at least 100, and he's at 0.68. So, like, I just think that we're seeing something that's just I would like to say it's unsustainable because history says it's unsustainable, but every single thing I'm watching says it's entirely sustainable. And instead, unlike Shearer and Henri, I'm not saying bad things about those guys, but the Premier League is deeper than it was during their age because of the increased riches that have come with even more Premier League TV rights and the ownership groups that have come in. So, like, the flat track bullying where you can get, you know, four against the 17th or 18th ranked team in the Premier League table can still happen, but it's a more of a challenge now. So, like, if he can get to 100, if he plays two more seasons and hits that number, I think it's going to be inarguable. Like, even Ronaldo was 103 and 236. He was at 0.44, and Haaland's at over one.
Yeah, it's absurd. I mean, whenever you're kind of in the 0.8 goals per 90 to above, like, I don't care what the league is, like, that's an insane prolific feat, right? And I loved me some Kun Aguero. Like, he was, I hate saying this about a City player that's owned by a nation state, but I mean, he was one of my favorite strikers, and he sort of did get a little bit unlucky where he was kind of breaking down by the time this really turned into a machine. But I mean, he was amazing. And to me, like, it's not even a question at this point that Haaland is a more prolific player than he was. And I loved Aguero. I think Aguero is one of the most underrated strikers in Premier League history. And to me, if you gave me the choice between the two of them, even in their primes, like, what Haaland's doing is nuts. And I mean, like, the fun part about him is he's such a beast. Like, that's the enjoyment about this too, is like, he isn't just like, you know, like a savvy poacher. Like, he's rifling left-footed shots into the corner, or like jumping where his leg is at somebody's head to like redirect a ball in. You know, he's added headers to his game. He's in on fast breaks, like, and he's just a monster. And I think, like, there's something impressive too about the fact that, like, he is this physical beast, but he also is just turning into a prolific machine that gets on the end of everything. Yeah. And Spurs are going to be experiencing probably all facets of the way that he can score his goals this weekend.
Yeah. Just wrapping it up, Ian Wright, I did forget him. He's kind of lower on the list. He was at 0.53 on his ratio. And the worst ratio of anybody who ever scored 100 goals in the Premier League. If I gave you 5 minutes, you'd probably come up with it. But do you know it off the top of your head?
Oh, God, the worst ratio of somebody. I mean, I'm assuming it's like early aughts, but I can't think of who it would be.
It's Ryan Giggs.
Wow. Right?
Giggs just got over 100 in 632 appearances.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably because he played about 750 matches, but I was close there, 690.
Well, Haaland's going to eclipse all of them and set, like, you know, potentially like a Cy Youngian record, right? Like, if he goes, if he has a one ratio and scores 100 goals, like, that's like having whatever it is, 510 victories. And I don't think it'll ever be approached again. So, Brett, as you said earlier, give me every single City bet. So I'm not stopping at Haaland to score 2+. Other ones I like, just worth mentioning. And it goes back to something we always talk about in City. Like, they jump on people early, they jump on people often, and then they like to give up goals. So I am going to go with Man City to score in both halves, -125. City to win both halves, because I think they're going to score four or more here. And if they do that, I think they'll definitely win both halves. That's +175. And then the consolation goal, baby, Spurs to score in the second half is +130. So I'll take that one as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. This is like the OK Corral buffet of City bets against Spurs. So I'm in. I don't know if OK Corral still a thing. I don't know if they are, but I'm giving them a shout out. If they want to sponsor us, OK Corral, just give Toby a call.
Yeah, far away from a dusty rotary phone, I'm assuming. Yeah, just one last thing to say about this. I would say my favorite bets of the entire year are City bets, and are Odegaard shot on target, and then fading Spurs. So the fact that I get to do two of the three of them in a single game is tremendous. I am giddy about this match on Sunday. It will be back for the five pint.
Oh,
but it sounds like we agreed. we agree too much to talk about too much more.
Yeah, and believe me, I've already been on record saying that the city against the spread is my weighted blanket of picks in the 5-point. So it took everything in my power to not be boring and be like, yeah, I'm just going to put all five on them.
All five on it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about a few other games, even though we both just mainly want to bet that City Spurs match. Yeah. So we'll go Newcastle, 7th at 23 points versus Man United, 6th at 24 points. This game is Saturday at 3 p.m. Newcastle's minus 110. Caesars has United at plus 270. The draw is plus 270. Newcastle minus half a goal is minus 115. United is minus 115. Woo! Man, I'm still so giddy over that City and Spurs game. I'm having a hard time even reading numbers, Brett. So my question for you to lead off this match, in your opinion, and I know you have one, are the United struggles overblown at all right now? They do have 3 wins and a draw in their last 5, and people are still talking like they are circling the drain. And we were talking that way 2 weeks ago. Has their like semi-bounce back in that 2 weeks changed your mind at all?
No. I mean, because again, you know, they basically eked out it. Well, I wouldn't say eked. It was 3-0. But I mean, the chances in the Everton match were about even. You know, then the other wins were, or the other match was against Luton Town. And then, you know, they go ahead and then the Champions League just yesterday, you know, Galatasaray, I'm saying that wrong too, probably, you know, basically plays them even. And this is a team that's like not even winning the Turkish league. So the underlying numbers, I'm always going to, I mean, you hate being this guy, because I know like regular soccer fans like, oh, you and your stats and your data or whatever, but these are the reason that they exist, right, Toby? Like, they tell you that these little blips are just little blips. That's all they are. They're lucky little spurts. And this team is fundamentally looking like an 8th or 9th place Premier League team at this point. That has not changed, and it won't change in 3 matches. Like, this is why we have the data. So no, I'm not buying into it. We've seen how flawed this team is. We talked about it at the very beginning of the year. You and I had this conversation. This team last year was so reliant on a 31, now 32-year-old defensive midfielder with a ton of miles on his legs and Marcus Rashford basically playing like a top 5 player for about 3 months, right? And those two things were, those are not sustainable things in general. So the fact that those things were not sustainable and their numbers are looking like they do this year just tells me any little short-term things that I'm not going to like fall for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And look, Casemiro is going to be out for an extended period of time, potentially, it looks like here. And so like, aren't we right back to where we were? Like, we're back to where we were thinking they were struggling without him, but we now have some evidence that Onana might not be that guy. And in the Champions League, he gave up 2 free kicks to Ziyech, my boy, that both of them look savable to me. Like, so where do you pinpoint this? Is it the back line? Is it the goalkeeper? Is it the coaching? Is it the tactics? Is it the midfield? Is it the offense? Or is it literally all of that? And in that case, how are they even a top half Premier League team?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a complicated answer, right? Like, everybody would love to say a smoking gun, or you watch, you know, whatever Paramount when you're watching the, you know, the Champions League game, and they'll go to the halftime show and everybody will give their take on it. It's always just one thing. It's definitely not just one thing with United. There's clearly the money they've spent, and smart writers have written about this going through their transfer spend over the last 3 or 4 years. And especially under Ten Hag, has not been good. So their player recruitment's been poor. They haven't really developed anybody from their academy outside of like Rashford that's been an elite level player. And their depth in general, I mean, remember, this is a team that we were just talking about like a couple of weeks ago, or probably more close to a month or 6 weeks ago, that was like turning to Scott McTominay as their 12th guy, basically, to step into the starting lineup and play as like a support striker. So that tells you that there's a whole chain of things that are going on there. They're taking a defensive midfielder, putting him as like a support striker because they're desperate because their depth isn't there. And then it doesn't make the rest of their pieces work. So it shows you the lack of a plan tactically, where they're just trying to ad lib and find whatever they can to make it. And this is like one of the most richest, most powerful teams in the world. Granted, they've been dysfunctional for a long time now, but like, that just kind of shows you that everything is broken. Onana, it breaks my heart. He's been a little disappointing. I don't think he was ever, you know, going to be like a super elite shot stopper. I thought he'd make up for that for his aggressive play and his sweeping ability and his ability to play out from the back. But again, they were rolling out Victor Lindelof at left back. Like, yeah, I get it. Luke Shaw's hurt. But like, you should have more depth than Victor Lindelof playing left back for you. Like a couple of injuries should not get you to that point when you're Manchester.
Yeah, back. Luke Shaw's back now. And so maybe that gives them a little bit of bump. And look, on the bright side, they could just rewatch that Garnacho goal like 10,000 times and ignore the rest of the season. And that would probably be a better way to spend their spring. But I asked you those questions first because I was waiting for you to give me a single reason to not take Newcastle here, but you failed to do so. Like, they're going to play a lineup that looks a lot like the 3-0 team that got stomped by Newcastle earlier in the year, and that team had Casemiro in it, and I think he's pretty doubtful for an extended period of time. Plus, they have to go up to St. James Park. St. James Park, as I just watched last weekend with Chelsea, is a very difficult place to play. I usually ignore home field advantage a lot in my handicapping, but I think that is one place that is a clear exception. It is hostile. It's like going over the wall to fight the wildlings. So put it all together. It's only minus 110 on the money line for Newcastle. I can't see a reason to take any other side unless you gave me one, which you didn't.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I could give you about taking Newcastle, even though I'm doing the same thing and taking them as well, at that money line number, is like Lewis Milley was starting in their Champions League game in which the scoreline was 1-1, but PSG annihilated them, like essentially in terms of chances created. So, I mean, it was a complete beatdown. I mean, if you do want the pure XG numbers, it was 4.4 expected goals created for PSG and only 1.3 for Newcastle. Now, granted, that was aided by an Mbappe penalty, which is like automatically baked into to XG total XG numbers at a 0.75 clip or 0.8, depending on which model is running it. But I mean, they're still like they got trampled by PSG, and Lewis Milley is starting for them in the Champions League. That could have very easily been a 5-0, 4-0 loss right there. Yeah. And I think though that performance is actually probably what's driving the line. And so I'm definitely worried about this Newcastle depth. Like, this situation for them is not good. But at this point, like you said, I am looking for the reason to take United. I came into my prep being like, I don't like where Newcastle's at. What? Give me something to tell me that I should just take United on this thing, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we're agreed on that, but like, what are you seeing in the prop market? I'm personally going to play Newcastle race to two goals at plus 110 because of the absence of Casemiro, the fact that there's no absence for Harry Maguire. He still seems to be out there every week. And I like Isak, and like, I know you're down on some of their other guys, but I think he's going to find the net. I think they're going to find it twice, and I don't think United's going to. So the race to 10, getting at a plus 110 instead of a minus number, just taking the Newcastle team side, seemed like good value to me.
Yeah, I mean, the one that I was looking at, I mean, he scored in their last Premier League match was Joel Linton's anytime goal scorer number. He's got sneaky good underlying numbers. And you got to remember, like, before they moved him into this like defensive midfielder-ish role, although now he's kind of been back on the front line a little bit, but he came to Newcastle as a striker. Like, that was what Joel Linton was supposed to be. He was supposed to be their nine. And then they kind of moved him, and all of a sudden you see him picking the ball up off center back sometimes. But his expected goals per 90 is about 0.21, and he's plus 500 as an anytime goal scorer. So you're automatically getting like a little margin of value. You're getting a 5-1 goal scorer slightly over, or a guy that scores goals slightly over 5-1 at exactly 5-1. But with the United dysfunction, that run through the midfield, the way that he gets his goals now, or if he's playing as a pure attacker, like, you're getting a boost if he plays as a pure attacker. And then you also still get him as a great chance to score from coming from the midfield, the way United's defense has been in shambles at times. I really like that number. It's a plus 500 bet. So, I mean, it's like, I know you're going to be like, yeah, bro, there goes Brett with one of his high scoring bets. But I mean, you're basically getting a plus 500 bet for a dude on a Champions League club playing a very mediocre, like almost mid-table performing team. And he's going to play it probably in the attacking band again against United.
Yeah. Throwing your five pint. I'm welcome to see it. All right, so let's move on to our next match. It is Chelsea. I'm not all that excited to talk about them, but we're duty bound because they are playing Brighton. Chelsea's 10th at 16 points. Brighton is 8th at 22 points. This game is Sunday at 9 a.m. Chelsea is minus 140. Brighton is plus 340. The draw is plus 300. Caesar says Chelsea at minus half a goal at minus 140. And Brighton at plus 110 on the double chance. So let's start on the other side of this one, Brett. We've gone a little while before we checked in on Brighton. They haven't lost since October 21st against City, but there have been a lot of draws in that table. They still have scored in every match this year, except for the cup game against Chelsea, which makes this rematch a little bit interesting. But they are conceding goals to the teams like Forest and Sheffield and Everton, which is keeping them from being higher on the table than they currently are. So as someone who is just inches away from publicly declaring for Brighton, I still can't believe you haven't done that yet. How are you feeling about the Seagulls?
Well, it turns out losing two really good players hurts. I think that over the course of the longer stretch of games, we're seeing the loss of Caicedo and McAllister, right? Caicedo stepped in and he's done a good job assimilating into, at least, you know, in the recent matches I've watched into Chelsea's starting 11. And McAllister has been great playing at the base of the midfield for Liverpool. Obviously, you don't prefer him as a six, but he's still doing the same thing. He's just doing it in that spot. And he's had a really good season there playing a lot of minutes. And, you know, for Brighton, like that's a really tough thing to continue. They're smart in their recruitment. I think in some ways too, like they've gone full football manager in their recruitment where they're just like, they're looking for value. And so they're trying to find, you know, like Ansu Fati has come over because they could get him on loan, but it's like, did you really need him? Or could you have used those wages to get like a midfielder that wasn't, you know, some roll in the dice Ligue 1 kid that you gave a shot to. Right. And so like they just want to jam a bunch of attackers on the pitch. And I'm not sure that's worked out for them. So like Adam Lallana's made appearances in the midfield. They had a starting 11. This was before the run of draws and wins here, where I was watching it was James Milner at right back, Pascal Gross and Billy Gilmore in a double pivot. Mm-hmm. That's a big drop off from Alexis McAllister and Caicedo manning those two spots. So I think what you're seeing is like, this is kind of the disheartening thing about the small club being, you know, one of the selling clubs for the most part, is you're eventually going to hit a little bit of a blip between waves of talent. And I think part of it's on Brighton for using their resources to just try to buy as many attackers as possible and just be like, well, we'll just try to just blow teams off the pitch. Who cares about the midfield? It's an interesting theory. It hasn't been working out great when like 9-4 is putting up two goals against you and Sheffield's scoring against you. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, with this team, I'm not going to question them because they're clearly doing something right as a club who was, you know, in the championship 5, 6, 7 years ago and is now playing in Europa. This club is clearly doing something right. But, I mean, they might just be hitting the talent deficit that they couldn't make up.
Yeah, I mean, this game makes me really nervous, right? Because like, if you have a game like Brighton and with all the deficits that you just described in the midfield, and Chelsea has spent over $200 million on Caicedo and Enzo, and they can't boss the midfield in this game, then that feels like money that's somewhat set on fire. I mean, I don't think it is over the long term. I think they'll become one of the most dominant midfields in Europe, but they're not there quite yet. Caicedo might have settled in, but he certainly hasn't started earning the fee that he was paid quite yet. And then out on the fullbacks, James and Cucurella are both suspended, which means we'll probably see a Colwill and Gusto, even though they both had to withdraw from international duty with minor injuries. I guess they could dust off Ian Mattson, but I have definite concerns about their fullbacks entering this game against quality Brighton wingers. Like, they might not have the midfield they used to have, but they're still really lively out wide. It helps a little that Brighton's dealing with some of their own injuries. They're likely to be without Lamptey and Fati. But overall, like, I just can't see the value in this Chelsea number at minus 140. The days of Fortress Stamford Bridge are long gone. They've struggled to impress at home all season long. And given the suspensions and the inconsistencies, I cannot lay minus 140 on them. So I'm forced to take the other side. And given the number of draws that Brighton finds themselves in, plus their ability to put the ball in the net, the double chance makes the most sense to me at plus 110.
Oh, Toby, you know where this is going. You already
coward's
know
way me. Out, isn't it?
It's going the coward's way out. Yeah, absolutely. I'm taking the draw just because I couldn't find anything to differentiate these two teams. I think if Reece James wasn't going to be suspended for this match, I would probably have eaten the minus 140. But the fullback situation against a rotating group of really good wingers, you know, and plus I got to stand for Evan Ferguson, right? Like I can't, he's not going to go down. He's not going to go down in this match. Like he's not going to lose. He's going to will him to win. He's the next great striker. No, I just couldn't find anything that separated these two and the draw just had enough value for me. So, I mean, I hate doing it, but you know, it's like if this is a visual thing, I just have a shirt on that just said coward's way out with my face right underneath it.
Well, look, you just said his name somewhat facetiously, but I'm going to give Evan Ferguson some love at plus 225. His value seems way off on the anytime, given that Nkunku is plus 150 and probably won't even make the bench. Like, I'm at least confident Ferguson's going to play this game, so I'd much rather have plus 225. Matoma at plus 350 also seems high, given the fullback suspensions. So I like both of those numbers on the anytime. And the number I really like, Brett, even though I don't like the juice, I got to find something to pair it with, is both teams to score is minus 180. And I think that if Chelsea is going to do insane things like score on free kicks, which made me fall out of my chair since I hadn't seen that in so long, and they're going to continue this revert to the mean, and Brighton wants to play these wide open matches and certainly has quality of their own, and Thiago Silva is just going to hand goals away on a silver platter, I love both of them to get on the score sheet. I just have to find some way to improve on that minus 180.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask you this. You always set me up for things, and this is not a dig. Like, don't get me wrong, this is not a dig at you in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, where are you at on the Thiago Silva washed spectrum? Like, are we trending there? Is he already there?
He's absolutely not washed. He's absolutely not washed. And what's interesting about Chelsea is he's causing them a little bit of a problem, not with like, is he washed or not, but they keep rolling him out there and they have to rotate for him, obviously, because of his legs and his age. So like the defensive continuity is something that's sort of starting to disintegrate a little bit as, ironically, some people come back from injuries. And so like Desailly and him were playing as a center back pairing for a little while, but he was out there with Badiashile last week. And it was like they had just met, even though they were the first choice for a good section of last year. Like Newcastle kept finding space in between them because they weren't communicating all that well. And then Silva obviously made that huge mistake. So I think that they would benefit from making a decision about what they're going to go with. Like, is Colwill going to be their left back? And then they just need to find a right back. Is Badiashile somebody that's going to become undroppable for them? In which case, Silva might find themselves in more cup games just because they need to establish a dependable pairing. And I just don't think he can do it, especially during the fixture congestion of December when we have a lot of matches in a short amount of time.
Yeah, well, that assuages my fears since you watch them, obviously, every match, because it'll be a sad day if and when Thiago keeps playing to the point where he is clearly washed.
It's just a matter of standards. Like, yeah. Are we comparing him to El Monstro? Like, he's not that guy anymore. He's one of the best center backs in all the Premier League last year. And yeah. I don't think he's dropped more than like a few percentage points from this year to last year when he was already one of the best.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I also am clearly on a bad track record of calling players washed because I was doing it for Sun like all of last year and then he's still scoring goals. So, you know, it goes to show the messenger here isn't very good. But for my my prop on this one, this game looks like it should be a goal fest. But then when you factor in some of the injuries, the suspensions, the iffy midfield play from Brighton, even though it's juiced up around all their attackers that are young and promising. The bottom line is the team that allows the fourth fewest touches in the attacking third is Brighton. The team that allows the fifth fewest touches in the attacking third is Chelsea, and they're playing each other. And so the under of not 3.5 goals, because the juice on that was terrible. The under of 2.5 goals is plus 140. And I'm taking it because this game screams to me like one where we're going to look at who the teams are and the reputations of the managers and kind of forget about the fact that like they also are really good at suppressing teams from getting into dangerous spots. So there are 1-0, 2-0, 1-1 draws, 0-0 draws that are very much in play in this match here, right? With and so that I think that number at plus 140 to get five score lines that are going to basically be, you know, right in the wheelhouse of cashing that bet was just too good for me to pass up.
Yeah, if Reece James was out there, like just like you might have eaten the 140, I'd probably eat the under if he was out there, but he's not. So I just think that there's going to be a huge mistake made out wide that's going to leak a goal that probably we don't expect to happen given the statistics throughout the rest of the year. But you know what, Brett? 1-1 with an Evan Ferguson goal means that every single bet we just gave out cashes. So let's go for that.
Bring it home. Bring it home, baby.
Well, let's bring it home in the Premier League before we do our study abroad with Liverpool, third at 28 points versus Fulham, 14th at 15 points. Sunday at 9 a.m., Liverpool is minus 400, Fulham is plus 1,000, the draw is plus 475. Liverpool minus a goal and a half is minus 140, Fulham is plus 110. So, Brett, we're talking about this match instead of league leaders Arsenal's at your request. So anybody out there at Brett, not me, I don't want to hear the Gooners. This is his fault. I'm not sure what to think about Liverpool after that City game. It felt lucky to me they escaped with a 1-1 draw, and it was so strange to see Alisson struggle the way he did. I didn't know you could catch Ederson-itis just by sharing a pitch. And Doku just destroyed TAA, of course, but Trent got his revenge by rescuing a point by popping up in a very midfieldy position, which is where he should be all the time. Alvarez and Foden were really wasteful, and that's how we got a draw. How did you feel about Liverpool after that match? Because I just felt strange.
I still feel like they're right about where I thought they were. Like, I think City's the favorite to win the title. I think that Liverpool is right there with Arsenal, but they're still an arm's length behind. And I don't think that really changed too much for me. And part of the reason I wanted to talk about this too is like, that was the epitome of the Trent Alexander-Arnold experience of shaky defensively, but then he does something on the attacking end that makes up for it. And you get the value from him right there. But also, I mean, this Liverpool team is just interesting to me. I think that we will just be continuing to learn about what this team is. I think this stretch, this December gauntlet that every team is going to go through is going to inform us more about Liverpool than anybody else. We're going to see their depth at play. We're going to see how they can weather a storm that's going to a fixture list that's going to have some very winnable matches. I mean, because not only do they have Fulham in front of them here, and Fulham's just fun to make fun of because they're so plain Williams. Like, that's great.
The Ghost of William.
Our alternate podcast name. But yeah, Liverpool is going to play Fulham, then they're going to play Sheffield, then they're going to play a Palace team that's struggling, then they're going to play a United team that we've already talked about, and a West Ham team that's clearly missing Declan Rice. And so that's all happening basically right up to Christmas. And then we're going to see him against Arsenal after that stretch. So we're going to get this thing of like watching them, figuring out if this team is just going to be such a roller coaster, they're going to drop some of these games right before they get into a tilt. That's going to be huge for title implications when they play Arsenal on the 23rd. So this is a super fascinating stretch for Liverpool. I am like, from just a curiosity perspective, I can't wait to see how these results come in, which is part of the reason why I wanted to talk to them. Also, who wants to talk about Wolves? Like, do anybody want to talk about Wolves? I don't think Gary O'Neill wants to talk about Wolves.
Yeah, that's fair. And you're right about Trent. I mean, it was a very quintessential experience. And that goal he scored was sublime. Yeah. But if Alvarez was better in that match, it would have been a sublime moment in a 4-1 loss because he was just getting destroyed over and over again out wide.
Your boy Doku, who you were on, like, right away, he is legit.
Yeah.
He's really freaking good. So I think Doku is going to be destroying a lot of right backs. He may destroy peak Reece James even at certain points. So let's not just single out Trent with Doku, because Doku's been making a lot of people look foolish lately.
Agreed. Fulham makes themselves look foolish. They have certainly demonstrated they are not afraid to get beat really badly by top opponents. They've got 2-goal losses to Villa, Chelsea, Spurs just in the last couple months, caught a 5-1 lashing City delivered to them. It honestly makes me nervous to bet on Poole scoring twice here or three times that they concede. But Fulham isn't well-staffed to take advantage of Liverpool's various weaknesses defensively, which I've always said is TAA and then McAllister holding. So I guess I have to play the adjusted line here for Poole and hope they get a goal early enough to make sure the game is open enough to get the other one. What are you doing?
Yeah, this is a bet against Fulham's just absolutely pathetic attack. There are certain teams, and we, you know, when we were on Trendy, we talk about this in the NFL, and all the other shows in the network probably do the same thing too. Like, you know, certain teams can exploit inefficiencies better than others. I don't care who Fulham decides to actually put on the left wing, they're not going to exploit Alexander-Arnold. It's just not going to happen. It's the anti-Doku, if you want to put it that way. So I, too, am taking them on the adjusted spread because this Liverpool attack is incredibly potent. I mean, they have depth. They have such – I mean, we've talked about this. Like, it was crazy that they're bringing up Darwin Nunez. Darwin Nunez would start for all but, like, 10 teams in the world, and they're bringing him off the bench to start the year. Obviously, with injuries, you're going to see some of these guys rotated out. And thankfully, the Luis Diaz situation with his parents being kidnapped has resolved itself. So he's back, which is fantastic for not just soccer reasons, but also for his own personal
life. That's what I was going to say. Diaz, like, would start for all but 8 teams in the world. So now he's coming off the bench.
Yeah. And like I said, it's great that he's back just because his parents are okay. And that's a good thing. So for this one, my thought was, you know, maybe even taking up like an adjusted line with Liverpool or a clean sheet. But because Liverpool is Liverpool, and because I've seen them do this thing against Luton Town where they were failing to score multiple goals, and that game ended up being a draw, is the both to score no juice was less than the both to score yes. And that, like, intrigued me because it's -110 for both to score no. There's a very good chance that Fulham do not score because they're Fulham. And you're almost getting even money for just basically betting Fulham not to score. And if in any scenario, in my opinion, where Fulham gets a draw or result of this match, I'm assuming it's because Liverpool is going to be wayward in front of the net and wasteful in front of goal. And that, so zero or one is going to be heavy in the Fulham win or draw range. So at -110, I just felt like that was really good value on the both teams score no line.
Yeah, I'd look at the clean sheet win for Liverpool at that point, but that's just me. All right.
Man, this is the Trent Alexander-Arnold hater, and he's telling me that.
Fair point.
Fulham can't go get one goal and shut out Liverpool? I don't know, man.
When the ghost of Willian is your best attacker, it's easy to play clean sheet wins. All right, we're going to do a quick study abroad right after this break and then get out of here, as I think we're pushing our time limit. All right, we are back and we are doing something we haven't done, which is going right back to the same country, Brett. We looked through the list and it was a clear winner, which we had to do because of your personal passion for this team. And that is Napoli, fourth at 24 points versus Inter, first at 32 points down in Serie A, Sunday at 2:45 p.m. Inter is +140, Napoli is +180, the draw is +240. Inter minus half a goal is +130, and Napoli is -190. So, Brett, we did Inter just last week, and I don't want this to become an Inter pod, but like every proper soccer hipster, you've been bursting at the seams to talk about Napoli. So during the holiday season, I could not deny you a chance to do so, as I am no Grinch. So go ahead, friend, empty the notebook on every soccer fan's second favorite team.
we probably got to him a year too late. Luciano Spalletti, the lovable maniac that he was, left the team's post. That way, he wasn't fired or anything. He just left the post at the end of last season. But this Napoli team has been so much fun to watch the last couple of years. Spalletti had them playing the super aggressive, high flying attack. You know, none of their attackers are going to be players that like you write home about, with the exception of two. And that's going to be, and I'm sad here. It's going to be so embarrassing when I get this right. It's going to be our guy, Havacha Kavaratskhelia. I think I got that right or close to it, or at least we know who it is. We're just going to call him Kava to be short. And then Victor Osimhen, who's been linked to a ton of bigger clubs, is one of the premier up and coming young strikers. So those two guys have been kind of the bell cows for this Napoli team. They're definitely going to be the biggest names. Osimhen's been in and out of the lineup a lot this year with injuries. But they kind of rotate this group of like slightly above average attackers. So they have Raspadori, they have Piotr Zielinski, who plays as kind of attacking midfielder, and Matteo Politano, and all these guys kind of sub in. There's a lot of aggressive subbing with this team. You'll see Osimhen even get subbed out sometimes in the 70th minute for some of these players to come off the bench. And so they just kind of throw waves of like pretty decent attackers at you, and they still play this aggressive thing. One of my favorite players 3 years ago, he kind of burst onto the scene coming back with Fulham, was Andre Frank Zambo Anguissa. So he's not like, he gets pegged, I think, as like a kind of dirty work defensive midfielder sometimes, which isn't really reflective of what he does. He's kind of like Ruben Loftus-Cheek, but with defensive steel. And he's added a lot to this team. He's been a super fun player. There are probably a ton of Premier League teams that could have used him. After Fulham let him escape to Napoli, I kind of never really understood that one. But they're just fun. Like, this team is fun. They're going through a little turmoil right now. Rudy Garcia just got fired in middle of November. And Walter Mazzarri, who, all you Watford heads that are out here, all you Watford guys, the Pazzo family, Walter Mazzarri was one of the carousel managers when Watford was hanging in and out of the Premier League in the mid-20 teens here. But he is now going to be in charge. They're still pretty good. They actually have the second best underlying numbers in Serie A. I think, to me, they're more of a title threat to Inter than Juventus was. And so I'm thinking this matchup will be a lot more fun. It's definitely going to be a lot more high flying. So I'm really looking forward to this one.
All right. Well, Chelsea are going to pay $150 million for Osimhen, and FotMob has him rated as Napoli's fourth best player this year. So that's something to say for them. I know Napoli plays a style everyone loves, but the odds are just too bunched here to not go with who I feel is the better team, and that's definitely Inter. I think they have just a little more quality throughout the entire pitch. I love the Thuram Martinez combo, and I trust them more with my money than Napoli, even if they have captured everyone's heart. So I actually fear the draw more than the Napoli side here, but I'm no coward, so I'm going to go with the Inter money line at plus 140.
Well, we wound up in the same place. So as much as I enjoy talking about Napoli, as much as I've enjoyed watching them in the Champions League the last couple of years, I am going with Inter, because Inter, I am of the we talked about the skepticism with them and Juventus of not actually playing like real teams for the most part. and so I still think that the jury's sort of out on them. I think they're dominant. We clearly can see that they're a really good team. Are they an elite team? Are they going to make another run in a Champions League final? That I'm not sure about yet, because we just haven't seen them play enough good teams for me to really get that kind of feel. I still believe in them, though. I still think they're really good. The Benfica result, aside, basically, I still think this is a really good team. I think even the Benfica match, they basically outcreated them. It just happened to be a kind of a 3-3 draw. And I'm pairing them with Lautaro Martinez, who basically is one of the best strikers that's not in the Premier League at this point. He is awesome. He's generating shots basically at will. You talked about Thuram as a strike partner now, which is, in my opinion, a big upgrade on the very aging Edin Dzeko. We covered Inter a lot with their style of play, so I won't go there, but this team is good. Martinez is good. There's going to be goals in this match, where I was a little hesitant last week to talk about the optimism of goals. And so I'm taking him to score. I'm taking Inter to win.
And I am with you, not on that exact bet, but in that spirit, because I'm going both teams score yes again here at minus 150, because I'm getting Lautaro Martinez and I'm getting Osimhen and I'm getting Thuram and all this attacking power, and I'm not having to eat that much juice. And, you know, I got to admit, like, I'm watching Inter and I'm watching Napoli when they're playing real teams, not when they're playing like the 17th, 18th, 19th team in Italy. And every time I turn on a game between two, you know, an Italian in some form of heavyweight, it seems like there's a lot of goals. Like, Napoli gave up 4 to Real, they gave up 2 to AC Milan, they gave up the 3 to Fiorentina, they gave up 3 to Real again, they gave up 2 to Lazio, Inter gave up 3 to Benfica, 1 to Juve, 1 to Milan, and in every one of those games I just read off, they scored as well. So one, there's a decent heavyweight battle between Napoli and Inter and anybody else. It seems like there are both sides on the score sheet in almost every single instance. And minus 150 seems like good value if that's the case.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned the Madrid game for Napoli, and part of the easy sell for me at taking Inter at a plus number was, I won't even sit here and list it, but just for any of those interested, go look at Madrid's starting 11, because it was not the starting 11 you're probably picturing when you think about Madrid. And Napoli still got beat pretty soundly. So I think there might be some trouble brewing here. We could be kind of seeing the end of the Superfund Napoli era, or maybe this ends up being a blip, but that performance was a big key in taking Inter at the plus number for me.
All right. Well, you should listen to Brett. You should listen to all his plus numbers, because not only did he win November just slightly, he won 17 to 14.7, but we are officially entering not just the holiday season, but the Brett Coromino season.
Brett, one time of year.
Brett, do you know your record in the last two Decembers combined? Do you have any idea?
I know last year we were up an absurd.
Not we, you, sir. I mean, I was good, but you were incredible.
World Cup, I know we were awesome. I don't know what I did the year before that.
The last two Decembers, Brett, this is our third season. The last two Decembers, you are cumulatively plus 40 units. You are 40 units up in the rest of December. And since you are very close to break even since the show started, I probably don't have to tell you the math you are the rest of the months, but December, you are unfreaking beatable. So I am going to honor that. And I always go first here, but given how dominant you have been during the month of December, you go ahead and lead us off this time.
Wow. That's the weird thing about me is, like, it just makes me feel like I'm clearly doing something wrong in all the other months here, or just getting all my good picks in one month. But yeah. All right. So we're going to go for the 5-point here. Weighted blanket is going to lead it off. We got -1.5 for City at -125 for a pint. Erling Haaland, two or more goals at +275. I'm going to actually take the under in that Chelsea Brighton match. +140 at under 2.5 goals. And then I'm going to take Liverpool -140 against Fulham. And then the final one is going to be Inter +140 over my beloved Napoli team. Sorry, Napoli. Or what is it? How do you call it? I want to say Napolitans. What are people from Napoli?
If I call them Napoleons, am I going to get canceled?
I mean, maybe you're just driving traffic to the movie. I don't know. I was trying to think about this. I was going to call them like Neapolitans for a second.
Neapolitans?
Yeah. Pretty sure it's an ice cream. People that like Neapolitans.
Well, you should definitely listen to our picks in that game, since we don't even know how to refer to an incredibly cultured large group of people. So I am going to do something I've never done on the show before, Brett, and I am going to concentrate four of my 5 pints into a single game. That is how much I love the City Spurs matchup. I am going to join you for City -0.5 at -125 and Haaland to score 2+ at +275. Given we don't swap picks ahead of time, I am a little bit surprised we both came to that as best bets for the weekend. But I'm going to continue to pile on here with Man City to score in both halves at -125 and City to win both halves at +170. The only reason that I'm a little bit concerned about that last one and I'm spreading it out is the 1-1 second half, as Spurs like coast to a 5-1 victory after getting 4 in the first. So that is where I'm going.
City
with
coast to a 5-run victory.
I'm sorry,
Spurs City are coasting to a 5-run victory. You're in trouble this week, buddy.
That is true. I'm going home empty-handed, except for my last pick, because I just wanted to have some fun. And I also believe this is good value. I am doing a parlay of both teams to score in the City Brighton and the Napoli Inter game. So I need Chelsea, Brighton, Napoli, and Inter. All four of them get on the score sheet, and that gets me +159 if you put it together.
I like that. That's a good one. I would maybe be worried about Napoli, but for the rest of them, that's a pretty good number for that line. I like that.
Yeah, and super fun to root for and watch on a super fun weekend. We have a packed slate of NFL action. We have great soccer, obviously the college football championships. This is one of the good ones, folks. So put down the gingerbread house, put down the peppermint bark, put down the lights in the tree for just a few minutes and revel in sports It might be something that we get to do all year, but it feels particularly special around this time. And also special, Brett, my time with you. So thank you for joining. Thanks, man. Can't wait to come back and do it again with you next week. And until then, when we will be here with our usual interchange of horrible advice backed by expert analysis, take care, everyone.